Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guests today are two icons of the Tulsa visual arts world. P.S. Gordon has long been considered one of the city's most popular and prominent artists, known for his color-saturated watercolor still lifes and portraits, and a painter of the New American Realism School. Steve Liggett has long been an artist, a curator, and an art advocate for the city for four decades, nurturing local artists, bringing innovative, renowned national and international artists in all disciplines to Living Arts of Tulsa, where he was the artistic director from 1992 to 2017. The two have known each other since their days at the University of Tulsa, studying with Tom Manhart and Glenn Gotze, but studied very different art media. The two began collaborating about a year ago in Liggett's first art media, ceramics. The results of that collaboration go on exhibit this evening at the Liggett Studio. Botanica, Patrick Gordon and Steve Liggett, a collaboration features 30 classic ceramic forms, plates, vessels, and vases, featuring Gordon's distinctive floral forms. The show opens tonight with an opening from 5:30 to 9 at the Liggett Studio at 314 South Kenosha and continues on display through December 21st. Pat Gordon and Steve Liggett are my guests today. Pat and Steve, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So tell us a little bit how this collaboration got started. What was the impetus?
Shirley and I went on a trip to Dubrovnik. And while we were there...
Croatia, right?
Yeah, Croatia. Uh-huh. And I saw a show there by the ceramics of Pablo Picasso. And I looked at him and I loved him. And I thought, well... who is the local Picasso? And I thought,
oh, that's silly.
That's getting deep really quick here.
I know. Well, don't believe
and
that.
I thought, you know, I like to throw things, and it would be great to have a collaboration with Pat. Has a long time been a friend of mine and great painter, and I just thought it would be real fun. To be honest with you, I thought. It'd be just great to get together with him and put together some new pieces.
What was your response?
My response? Steve Liggett holds a very special place in my heart because when I came back from New York, he approached me with doing a show of my series of paintings entitled Men in Ball Gowns, which was done 25 years ago. And for 25 years, they have been rejected from New York. I couldn't get my gallery in New York to show them. Galleries in San Francisco, Los Angeles, nobody would show these paintings.
That's, you know, by today's standards, that's completely crazy. How many hit Broadway musicals has there been with guys in ballroom gowns?
I know. And yet my approach to them, unlike Broadway, was to approach them as if I was Gainsborough.
Right.
They were serious portraits of men in ball gowns. Well, Steve approached me and said that he wanted to do a show of them. Puts him in my heart forever.
Yeah, in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
In Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Right.
I walked in on what I thought was one of the best-looking exhibits I had ever made, that I had ever had presented of my work. And it was the first time I ever saw the 10 paintings together. And they were life-size full-length portraits, 5 by 7 feet. And if it wasn't for Steve, I would have never seen them in the same room. Mm-hmm. So for that, I'm indebted. He said, let's do this. I said, oh, it sounds like fun. And it has been fun. I've had a ball. Learning something new at 66, I think, is an important thing. I would tell everybody, go out and start. If you're over 65, go out and learn something new that you don't know anything about.
Well, was it a huge learning process?
Oh my God.
On how to, I know very little about ceramics.
Well, let me tell you this. When you paint, you're painting on a flat surface. When you paint on clay, it's bulbous, it's round, it's tall. It's got forms that you don't know how to deal with. It is not a flat piece of paper or canvas. He's taught me a lot on how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Does it sort of change your whole view of how you view your perspective and sort of...
a complete perception of what it's supposed to look like. All of a sudden, I have painted three-dimensional objects 50 years. I'm now making three-dimensional objects. Two different things. Watching, it's like watching somebody drive and then being put in a driver's seat and say, now you drive.
Now, your friendship goes back a long way, I guess all the way back to university days?
College.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you ever work together when you were in college?
I was on the third floor. He was in the basement.
Yeah, and never the twain shall meet.
We didn't think so highly of those people in the basement, and they thought less of us.
Absolutely. Those painter snobs.
That's what they called us.
Yeah.
Glenn Godsey, in the middle of it, was trying to give us a little peace and to go, now, don't look at it this way.
Oh, and Manhart was saying, you need to broaden your palate, Steve. There are people up there that really might teach you something.
Yeah. Well, so when you began collaborating, I know you started about a year ago. Obviously, it was a learning process and how to paint on a three-dimensional mm-hmm. object. Also, how to, when I think of ceramics, I don't think of vivid colors first and foremost, although there are examples of ceramics that have that. And of course, when I think of your work, Pat, it's color. So how did you sort of
We were working in low temperatures, mm-hmm. which gives you more color possibilities. And we struggled for like about 3 of those 10 months with problems with the clay.
Proper clay bodies.
Yeah, the clay bodies kept cracking on us. And so Pat would, I would throw the pieces and then he would paint on them with underglaze and we'd fire them and they'd crack. And it was like, oh God, there goes 2 weeks, And so we worked with 4 different clay bodies until we finally ended up with one that was perfect. And the pieces in the show resemble it.
Is that a common experience ceramics, you're always throwing stuff away.
Yeah, there's so many people who start in clay because it's sexy and interesting and it's pliable and all that, and they end up doing something completely different. They go to music or they go to, radio stations or they, end up somewhere else because it's frustrating. You spend a lot of time on a piece and then it just doesn't come out.
Now, is that something that happens in a two-dimensional world?
No, not at this point in my life. But
of course, when you're working in oil, you can always paint over it and start over.
Absolutely. Yeah. Your greatest enemy is just not repainting it. No, it didn't bother me that they cracked. I found it more curious than anything else. Did we lose 2 weeks' work? Yeah, well, we did. But you know what? We're going to make it up somewhere else.
Now, Steve, somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew you had ceramics at your beginning, but of course I've known you so long as a curator and running Living Arts. I always think of you doing anything but a traditional vessel or a plate.
Yeah, but my goal when I was 18 was to become a production potter. Mm. And I worked toward that when I was a single parent. Then I kind of had to be realistic about it, but I made a bunch of pieces even during the Johnson Atelier days. And then Ruth Armstrong came to me one day and she said, Steve, don't you have a job that pays you something? I said, yeah. She said, well, you don't have to do this. You don't have to be a production potter. You can make one-of-a-kind pieces. And so I started thinking, wow, art pottery. There's a huge history of potters working with painters, going back to the Greek vessels to
strong movement in the 19th century.
Sure.
In California and the Deep South had painters and clay people who were working together.
Yeah, Adelaide Robinow during the late 1800s, early 1900s is a perfect example of what Manhart used to call little old lady ceramicists that basically took it to a whole new level, like Tiffany and people like that, that the art pottery of the late 1800s, early 1900s.
It's this whole part of that craftsman movement,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And so it was really that what we're doing is really not new. It's new maybe for Tulsa, but it's not new in the history of clay.
Mm-mm. It's new for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely new for
us. And we're continuing from here, but this isn't a one-shot deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you began collaborating, was it an idea of let's do a botanic series from the start, or did you play around with that?
I think Steve just approached it knowing that I would probably paint a flower. And I was like, well, yeah, I'll probably paint flowers. I've thought about doing some portraits on these. I haven't done it yet, but I keep thinking something figurative on clay. But I knew I would paint flowers. I just didn't know how to do it because the color you put on the clay is not what it comes out.
Now, explain that for people who don't know ceramics.
Well, it's the oddest thing. I always wondered why clay people did it, because how could you figure out what something was going to look like if the clay and the glaze in its pure form is a different color than what it will be after it's been fired to cone whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how big a color shift are we talking?
11, 12, 13 different shade differences.
Okay. And, so still blue, if it's blue.
Blue, kind of.
Okay.
Kind of.
But it maybe start out royal and ends up turquoise?
It goes on looking white and comes out looking blue.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to make the judgment of value is a trick.
It's like Shirley will come to me and like hold up like a pattern and say, "You think I'd look good in this?" And you're looking at the pattern and you're trying to imagine what it would be like on her. And it's like, no, I can't figure that out, you know. But it was a huge shift for Pat, because I have a whole board in my studio that shows the tiles of what it looks like when you put it on and what it looks like after it's glazed. So we would take the little tile and set right next to him so he could then imagine what it was going to look like, but it still takes experience.
And when you're working with paint, you're used to putting the color you're putting on is
what you're putting on.
Yeah, right.
What you see is what you get.
Well, the work you created is really interesting. Some look like a P.S. Gordon painting with on a piece of ceramic. Others, though, look a little different. I mean, you've adjusted perspective. Some are very close up, very sort of macro images. Can you talk about what you tried to do with these pieces?
We're trying to determine an image to go on a form which may be larger, fuller in the base and lighter in the top. Makes me approach it somewhat differently than I would a painting. Some of it was accident. I make no bones about it. Hell, I'm not that good. But it was it's a completely different thought process in the creatively. And in oil paint, you go from dark to light. And in watercolor, you go from light to dark. Well, it's more of a watercolor technique. And so, you know, it's been 40 years since I've done years of watercolor, but it was more watercolor-like. And somehow it gave me permission to be a little freer. Because, you know, I'm so uptight about painting. It's embarrassing, but it's
really
true. Well,
after all these years?
I still want it precise, and I still want it accurate, and I don't like to goof around with it a whole lot because there's a certain expectation.
You would never want to create any sort of sketchy sort of work.
I've tried.
It's sketchy in a good sense.
Yeah, I've tried, and I think it's interesting, and then I go, oh, no, I've got to go back to what I do. Something's telling me this isn't right. But so this has been fun. I kidded Steve. We did this in midsummer, and the only time I really worked in this, I had 1 year at OU, and it's the only B I ever got in art school. So we knew I didn't have a real good feel for it. And the only time I ever worked in ceramics was when I went to vacation Bible school in Claremore, Oklahoma. And it would be a sunny morning, and the sun would be coming in through the church windows, and we'd be sitting there. And I said one day, Steve, this feels kind of like Vacation Bible School. And I just gave him such hell over that. And he wasn't very he thought I didn't mean it. But I meant it in the most wonderful way, that it made me have those memories of creating as a child that were so pure. And all of a sudden, I'm getting to do it again.
So you're having just pure fun as opposed to thinking, oh, I got to make this perfect because this is my reputation. All the baggage that goes just along with being an artist. Yeah.
So I jokingly referred to it as VBS. It didn't make him happy, but he does laugh about it now.
At one point, he wanted to call the show Vacation Bible School.
studies from VBS. But we didn't.
In fact, the name of the show is Botanica, Patrick Gordon and Steve Liggett, a collaboration, which opens tonight at 5:30 at the Liggett Studio and continues through December 21st. 30 works on clay, featuring the visual work of Pat Gordon and Steve Liggett's ceramics, which, Steve, I have to ask you, when I think of a lot of these images, a lot of the clay work looks very traditional. Mm-hmm. And when I think of the word traditional and I think of Steve Liggett, I think there is a vast gulf between the two.
You'll be surprised. There's really not.
There is not in this show.
I had to deal with clay widgets like I've never had to deal with clay widgets before.
Well, I had a lot of fun putting out some pieces that I thought would challenge Pat.
And they were challenging. They were deeply challenging. And, you know, they even sent me back to the 70s. A couple of the pieces, I would get completed with my part of it. And they just looked a little unfinished. And I said to Steve one day, you know, maybe I could do some China painting, mm-hmm. like the little old ladies down on Peoria used to do, where I used to go down and take classes with my mom in the early 70s. And by God, I went and Steve found a company in Dallas that still sold China paint, and I ordered China paint. And so part of these have color China painting on top of them. Yeah. We're not just limited to glaze. We got China paint.
Well, there was one piece, the white dogwood piece, which has the gold luster on the top, which that screams 1970s, doesn't it?
I think it does.
Yeah.
But you know what? It is kind of the 1970s, or I think apropos the late 60s at the current moment. And here we are doing this. I think it's an interesting point.
Well, and you know, one of the things that as we worked, we got to know each other. You know, really, really great. And he's such a great guy. And he told me the story about how when Judy Chicago was here in Tulsa at TU giving a talk, she wanted to learn more about China painting. And so tell the rest of that.
So her friend Cheryl Swadek said something about it. And I said, well, my mother and I took China painting down at this little shop on Peoria. And I said, well, let's go to Claremore and she can talk to my mom. So I took Judy Chicago to Claremore, Oklahoma to talk with my mother about her China painting. And then Judy went back to Chicago and started China painting.
And did the dinner.
The dinner.
Party.
The dinner party of, which is, I think, at the Chicago Art Institute now.
That happened right here in Tulsa. Mm-hmm.
In Tulsa.
So it's fascinating to me to learn how the spinoff from just a simple party where you introduce something can become a national phenomenon.
Well, an icon for the 70s.
The feminist movement, yes.
Going back to your vessels that you created, I was really struck by a couple. One was Celadon Roses, which mm-hmm. has this unusual look. I said, now that looks like a Steve Liggett vessel,
yeah.
as opposed to a plate or your traditional mm-hmm, vessels. Mm-hmm. But you really tried to go back to traditions for the most part
in
the show.
Well, I've always, you know, thought that a classical form like a calyx or an amphora uh-huh. or a vase would be really the thing to aspire to. And sure, yeah, I there are many people that live inside me. And so I have all of these possibilities. And I'm really inspired with this series by early Korean vessels and the beautiful shapes that they take on. And I thought that they lent themselves very nicely to Pat's flowers. So he would make something, I would see it, and then I would make another piece or a series of pieces, and then he would come in and say, oh, okay.
Oh, what am I going to do with that?
Well, I have to tell you, just from seeing pictures of the work, some of the most striking work is the black and white work. I'm so used to seeing P.S. Gordon, color, color, color. Seeing you work in black and white, it's just beautiful work.
Well, you know, before all that painting takes place, you have to draw it. And right. I'm a good draftsman. And I learned, I really did love painting or drawing in glaze in black on white clay body. And we'll probably do more of it because I do like it. Mm-hmm. I do like the black and white.
Were there any happy surprises when, you know,
every day?
I mean, when it comes out finally and you go, well, I didn't expect that.
Oh yeah.
Or I mean, because that's
I have
one.
No idea.
That's one of the great. Hearing ceramicists talk, they always say, you know, you never know what's going to come out of the kiln.
And I'm a novice, so I am dumbfounded every time one comes out. Like, huh? We made that. It was a certain detachment because I didn't have an expectation when it went in, so I didn't have an expectation for it to come out. That's not how I do painting. That painting has expectation from the very start.
And going back to something that Manhart used to always say, what are the implications?
This is Tom Manhart.
Tom Manhart, yeah. My teacher at TU. What are the implications of that? I would make these things and then hand them to him, and then he would look at them and take them a completely different direction than what I had suspected that they would go in. I mean, you know, where I thought there would be, you know, something, he would put it a completely different place. And it worked. And I was going, huh, I would never have thought of that. That's really amazing.
Well, can you give me an example?
Well, like the Celadon Roses piece that you mentioned, I would have never put the bulk of the roses at the bottom. I mean, I would have put them up higher on it. And yet I trust Pat. You know, I trust his compositional sense and his understanding of a weight, visual weight, in the piece. And so I just would go with it, you know. Far be it from me to come in and say, no, wait a minute.
Well, and I don't talk to him about what he makes. What he gives me is what I work with. I can't tell him how to make them. He can't tell me how to paint.
And that's where we started. I'll throw the forms, you paint on them. I'll glaze them, I'll fire them, but you take care of, you know, the actual
decorating.
Designing.
The decorating of
the painting.
In the 19th.
Them.
You build the house, I decorate.
In the 19th century, in the ceramics art, the artist who put the finished image was really called the decorator.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The decorative arts.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
They were called the decorator. And I just read that recently and thought, isn't that interesting? He's made me also want to read about historical clay and look at what was done. I can point out almost any painting of any period of the last 500 years, but can I do that with clay? No.
No.
I know I'm impressed when I see it.
Well, I thought there was a number of really interesting examples. I mentioned several of the black and whites, the bird of paradise on a big vase, the Icelandic poppies. The one that really caught my eye, though, because it's such an unusual color, is the bee's knees.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think I've never seen a thrown piece of work that is such honeycomb yellow.
Oh, it's got a lot of things on it.
It does have a lot of things on it. Pat was totally freaked out when I put that one out there. It was like, well, what am I going to do with this? And then he created what I thought was a widget that came off of the side. He saw as the possibility of a bee. and a moth and a butterfly, that kind of abdomen shape. And it grew and grew and grew. And we worked on that one for, well, you worked
two
on it.
2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, a long time. And then he would go back in with oxide pencils and draw back into the form before it was glazed. And so it had several firings on that piece.
Now, earlier I asked Pat, you know, he was surprised every day by what came out of the kiln. Your mm-hmm. experience, ceramicist, mm-hmm. Were you surprised by what would come out from time to time?
Many times, yeah. I mean, we experimented with crackle glazes, which I never have used in low fire. I've used them in high fire, and I've used them in raku, but I've never really explored crackle glazes with low fire. And wow, what another dimension that added to the design.
How does it react with low fire as opposed to high fire, where you get that traditional effect?
Well, you know, it's much more controllable in low fire than raku. Raku, you know, you pull the piece out and you blow on it, it cracks the glazes, and then you put it in smoke, and then the smoke goes into the cracks and creates that. In this situation, the compatibility between the clay body and the glaze are off. And so they intentionally crackle, and then you can fill them with an oxide that then creates the color in the crack.
And shows the pattern of the
crackle.
And
shows the pattern, which gives you another layer to his painting on them. So you've got like, then sometimes we would put a China paint on that, and then a luster sometimes also. So you have several different firings at different temperature ranges to get different effects.
It seems like a fun show. It's got, you know, beautiful color to a lot of the pieces, some beautiful pieces all told. And it sounds like you have a sort of a fun collaboration going. Is this something that's going to continue?
It is going to continue, and I think there's a possibility we might be adding one to our group.
I haven't heard about this.
Oh, yeah, you have. Yeah, you have, because Craig Kallenberg is interested in coming in. We're going to be just three old men sitting around a pickle barrel, you know, that making clay and talking about old times, which we have done when he's come over.
Yeah.
But he now wants to come do some work.
Okay. Well, I
so I'm hoping he really
him.
Will do it.
So we're going to get some glass in the...
I don't know.
No. Craig was a ceramics artist before he was a glass artist.
Yeah.
That's going back all the way to the 60s.
Well, it's pretty interesting. It's three iconic Tulsa visual artists
three
working
old
together.
Man and some clay.
Well, you can see the result of two old guys in clay in Botanica, Patrick Gordon and Steve Liggett, a collaboration. It opens tonight, a reception at 5:30 at the Liggett Studio.
Until
9 tonight. Yeah. So, and it continues through December 21st. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you,
Rich.
It's been fun.
Painter P.S. Gordon and ceramicist Steve Liggett speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. These two icons of the Tulsa visual arts world team up for Botanica. Patrick Gordon and Steve Liggett, a collaboration featuring 30 works, which will be on display tonight and through December 21st at the Liggett Studio at 314 South Kenosha. The gallery opening takes place this evening from 5:30 to 9. You can learn more at LiggettStudio.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.